History of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, the Battle of Issus, Part 1. A narrow strip of coastal plain led into Syria, fringed by mountain ranges that an army could only cross via one of three routes. Parmenio had gone ahead to secure the entrances to these, taking with him most of the non-Macedonian troops. Alexander busied himself in Cilicia, clearly feeling it safe for his army to be divided for the moment, until news arrived that Darius and his army were in Sochi in Syria, far nearer than he had suspected, and not far from the pass near the Pillar of Jonah. He hurried to reunite the army, and together with Parmenio's men, he advanced to Issus, where a depot was established for the heavier baggage and the wounded and the sick left behind. The king discussed with his officers whether it was better to wait for the Persians to come to them or to advance, and all seemed to have favored aggression. That meant taking one of the three passes, and Alexander decided to turn to the southernmost, perhaps because it would be keeping him by the sea for the longest, allowing bulkier supplies to be brought by water. The Macedonians reached Myrindris, where the savage overnight storm stalled the advance at the short of the pass. Then news came that Darius and his army were behind them, only about 100 stades, about 12.5 miles. Alexander didn't believe it. He sent trusted companions aboard a 30-oared light warship to investigate. Sailing north, they sighted the vast Persian encampment near the mouth of the river Panaris. Only when they returned did the king accept the fact that the enemy had outmaneuvered him. It was not by design, for neither side had much idea what the other one was doing or intending. Darius had waited for some time at Sochi, planning to let the Macedonians come to him so he could pick a battlefield in the open plains of Syria, where his far greater numbers, especially in cavalry, should give him the advantage. He had waited even longer, then Alexander probably would have obliged. But the Persians were puzzled by the Macedonians' long halt at Tarsus and operations in Sicilia, and wondered whether the enemy was frightened to engage. Darius had a much larger army, which made it all the harder to be cautious, especially if the autumn was passing. Even the bureaucracy of the Persian Empire would struggle to supply so many people and animals if they stayed for a long time in one place or remained in the field during winter. A Macedonian exile still urged caution, arguing that the push into the narrow coastal plain was likely to favor Alexander's smaller and more nimble army, or at least it's claimed by our sources. Darius would not listen and refused to wait any longer. He sent much of his cumbersome baggage train and treasury away to safety at Damascus, although this still left the royal household and many other luxuries and non-combatants with the main force. He then advanced, heading through the northernmost of the three passes and not realizing that Alexander had already passed by until he reached the coastal plain. At Issus, he captured the Macedonian depot, executing or maiming the sick and wounded he found there. Like Alexander's massacre of the mercenaries at Granicus, such atrocities were risky, since they might easily enrage as much as terrify the enemy. Then Darius followed the Macedonians, looking for a good place to fight. When the presence of the enemy was confirmed, Alexander summoned his senior officers and unit commanders and gave them a pep talk. He assured them that the narrow ground between the mountains and the sea was in their favor, big enough for their pike phalanx and too small for the enemy hordes. These were Persian men. They'd been beaten before, and more than that, many of them were slaves instead of free men. Even while Darius's Greek mercenaries lacked the motivation of those fighting for their own just cause. If the famous 10,000 had routed the Persians so many times, could they not do with their greater numbers and the might of Macedonians, Thessalians, and Greeks united with the most martial tribes of Europe? Victory over Darius would bring far greater rewards than beating his satraps. Arrian recorded that, quote, he told them of anything else which at such a time before dangers a brave general would naturally tell brave men by way of encouragement. They crowded round and clapped and clasped their king's hand, and with cries of encouragement, urged him to lead them on at once. End of quote. Alexander had no real choice other than to fight, for retreating with the enemy so close was dangerous. That would shatter his prestige, lower morale, not to mention risk running out of supplies. His aim was to face Darius and thrash him, not to escape like Xenophon with the 10,000. The confidence he exuded was genuine, based on trust in himself and his soldiers, and the simple fact that there would have been no point launching an invasion if he refused the chance to fight when Darius had at last appeared. A battle there must now be, and it was bound to come soon with the armies such a short distance apart. That didn't mean that he had to rush. Alexander dismissed his officers and ordered the men to rest and eat a good hot meal. Scouting parties were sent north to the Jonah Pass to see whether the enemy was approaching. Learning that they were not, as the sun set, he led the army out of the camp. After about 8 miles, the pass was secure and the Macedonians halted. Outposts were set to maintain a careful watch while everyone else slept as best they could. So we're going to do this a little bit at a time. So we've got him in position. They're all going to take a nap. So the next time, it'll be dawn, and we'll start maneuvering again. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch. Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy. History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond. In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arians, The Campaigns of Alexander. In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood. The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.